VOA's Christina Menenti with your worldwide news update. Nearly 40 bodies were brought to a hospital morgue after a stampede Wednesday in northern India. Three police sources told Reuters as tens of thousands gathered to bathe in sacred river waters on the most auspicious day of a six-week festival. AP correspondent Karen Chemes reports.
Several people are feared dead and many more injured as tens of thousands of Hindus took part in the massive Mahakumbh festival in northern India. Many died after rushing to take a holy bath in the river. Police tried to manage the crowds as rescuers helped the injured. Distressed families lined up outside a hospital, inquiring about their relatives. The Mahakumbh festival, held every 12 years, started on January the 13th. It's the world's largest religious gathering. A sprawling tent city was built for them, with 50,000 security personnel to maintain order and manage crowds. I'm Karen Chemes.
The Palestinian Health Ministry says two Palestinians were killed by Israeli fire in the occupied West Bank overnight and into Wednesday. The West Bank has seen a surge in violence since Hamas's October 7th, 2023 terror attack out of the Gaza Strip ignited the war there. The ministry says more than 800 Palestinians have been killed. The U.S. Secretary of State is exempting war programs from the Trump administration's freeze on foreign aid. AP correspondent Ben Thomas reports.
U.S.-funded aid programs around the world have begun firing staff and preparing to shut down following the Trump administration's freeze on foreign assistance. The only exemptions, military aid to Israel and Egypt, and emergency food programs. But Secretary of State Marco Rubio has now agreed to at least temporarily keep spending money on certain humanitarian programs. A signed waiver obtained by the AP indicates those include programs that provide life-saving medicine, medical services, food, shelter, and subsistence aid. Ben Thomas, Washington.
This is VOA News. The Secretary of Defense is ordering a review of the nation's former top uniformed officer, retired Joint Chiefs Chairman Mark Milley. AP correspondent Jennifer King has more.
Pete Hegseth, the new defense secretary under President Trump, has ordered a review of retired General Mark Milley's conduct when he was chairman of the Joint Chiefs. Two defense officials confirmed the Pentagon Inspector General's inquiry will be looking into whether Milley should be demoted. Pentagon spokesman John Oliott says Milley's security detail and clearance has also been revoked. Hegseth's chief of staff, Joe Casper, said the decision was taken because undermining the chain of command is corrosive to our national security. Milley's relationship with the president soured during Trump's first term as he pushed back on a host of issues, and at Milley's official retirement ceremony, he said, "We don't take an oath to a wannabe dictator." Jennifer King, Washington.
Hundreds of foreign military contractors crossed into Rwanda from Goma on Wednesday after surrendering to the United Nations as M23 rebels that some say are backed by Rwanda consolidated control over eastern Congo's largest city. The rebels seized Goma's international airport on Tuesday, potentially cutting off a key aid route for hundreds of thousands of displaced people. The assault has drawn widespread international condemnation of Rwanda and calls for a ceasefire. According to medical sources, Goma's hospitals are overwhelmed, having treated at least 760 wounded. An accurate death toll remains unclear, as many casualties occur outside medical facilities. People gathered at a ceremony in the southwest Malian town of Kangaba to celebrate the one-year anniversary of Mali, Niger, and Burkina Faso's decision to quit ECOWAS on the eve of the three states' official departure from the West African trade bloc. The three countries have now formed their own confederation, the Alliance of Sahel States, or AES.
The AES is the renaissance of Africa, and I think that all the countries that aspire to the rebirth of Africa should join the AES.
That was Nestor Podas, head of the Burkina Faso delegation. The withdrawal has shaken the economic community of West African states that many consider to be the continent's most important regional group, which this year marks its 50th anniversary. An official said a small aircraft carrying oil workers in South Sudan's Unity State crashed on Wednesday, killing 20 people. Unity State's information minister said the passengers were oil workers of the Greater Pioneer Operating Company. He said among the dead were two Chinese nationals and one Indian. Media reports had initially put the death toll at 18, but the information minister told Reuters two survivors had later died. One person survived. That wraps up this update, but the world and news never stop. For additional updates, visit our website, voanews.com. I'm Christina Menenti, VOA News.
Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
The past 4 years, we've seen the Biden administration spend money like drunken sailors. It's a big reason we've had an inflation crisis in this country. And it's incumbent upon this administration to make sure, again, that every penny is being accounted for honestly.
That was Caroline Leavitt, White House press secretary, on the new Trump administration's move that pauses all federal grants and loans that started yesterday. Details coming up. Also, the withdrawal of Niger, Burkina Faso, and Mali from the Economic Community of West African States took effect today. And Egypt's president calls the proposed forced displacement of Gazans an injustice. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. The world continues to seek a way to halt the conflict in the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo. However, there are reports the M23 rebels, which now control much of the city of Goma, are moving south. Reuters News says diplomatic and security forces confirmed they are shifting towards Bukavu. DRC state media said DRC President Felix Tshisekedi will not attend a crisis meeting in Kenya with his Rwandan counterpart Paul Kagame scheduled for today. The spokesperson for Rwanda's president, Paul Kagame, told the French news agency AFP he will attend the summit. Yesterday, the United Nations Security Council held its second special session on the DRC conflict. Speaking via video link from Goma, the deputy UN envoy in the DRC, Vivian van der Peer, warned of a growing crisis for civilians.
We remind all parties of the obligation to uphold international humanitarian law and stress that attacks on United Nations peacekeepers may constitute war crimes. The degree of suffering that the population in Goma and its environment is enduring is truly unimaginable.
The M23 reached Goma on Monday. The DRC accuses Rwanda of backing the M23 and sending its troops to help them, which Rwanda denies. DRC Foreign Minister Therese Kayikwamba Wagner called for the Security Council to impose sanctions on Rwandan military and political leaders.
Le Rwanda continuera-t-il d'abuser votre respect?
Wagner asks the council members, what more will Rwanda do to continue to abuse their respect and authority? She says, from the United Nations Charter to international humanitarian law to human rights and the Luanda and Nairobi peace processes, Rwanda has proven that the UN statements mean nothing. Rwanda's UN ambassador, Ernest Rwamuseya, rejected DRC allegations that Rwandan soldiers have been involved in the fighting. Rwanda has long denied that it directly backs the M23, despite reports from the UN, United States, and others that it appears Kigali has supported the group in the past. Rwanda has accused the Kinshasa government of backing Rwandan rebels who live in the DRC and threaten the Kigali government.
The deteriorating security situation in the Eastern DRC has only one immediate cause: the obsession by the president of the DRC for a military solution and thirst for regime change in Rwanda. We have said over this over and over to this council. Indeed, this situation could have been solved a long time ago if President Tshisekedi had demonstrated political will and good faith in finding a lasting solution to this conflict.
U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio spoke yesterday with President Kagame and stressed the United States is deeply troubled by escalation of the conflict in eastern DRC. Rubio called for an immediate ceasefire in the region and for all parties to respect sovereign territorial integrity. A little while ago, I talked with Sabiti Jafar Alkatanti, our VOA reporter in Goma, the biggest city in the eastern DRC. For now, he says, the part of the city where he is located is relatively calm.
Yes, today I saw some activities. There was a mood, even if it was not like every day in Goma, we can say activities starting in the city. I saw people working, speaking, laughing, loudly, and I saw some pharmacy opening their door and selling drugs and medicines. I saw also taxi border passing and taking some clients. So life is starting slowly with M23, and they are trying to be friendly with people. They are meeting people and greeting them, making some mood with the population.
We have reports of rapes committed by the fighters, looting of property and humanitarian health facilities being hit.
Yes, I also saw that report, but for now it's not easy for a local a journalist based here in the city to get proof. I can say that today was the first day where things were open, so we need to investigate about this report and to get many elements. But for now, I can say it's true or not. But when a city is under war for around 5 days in Africa and everywhere in the world, I think rape and all and some violence can take place. But we still don't have any proof or evidence of this.
And Jafar, is it true that the rebels have seized the airport, potentially cutting off the main route for aid to reach hundreds of thousands of displaced people?
For now, the airport of Goma is also under M23 control, and it since yesterday in the midday of yesterday, M23 took the control of the airport because the FARDC soldiers who were inside resisting, I think, stopped fighting against M23 and surrendered to MONUSCO. For now, the airport is under M23 control, but the Goma airport is also a UN base. So the place which is a UN base, still under UN control, as UN installation, can't be touched by M23. But the civilian part of the airport is now under M23 control.
So are you saying UN peacekeepers are still in and around the airport?
Not only in the around the airport, but inside the airport, because in the airport of Goma, there is a zone which is a base to UN peacekeepers since long time. And that base is where they coordinate all their flights. And, you know, they also have some jet fighters and helicopters. So they have civilian and military equipment in the airport in a place which is their base. No one as local can touch it, either the government or M23.
And lastly, Jafar, are you aware that there are protests going on in Kinshasa? Embassies are being attacked, including those of Rwanda, France, and the United States. Protesters expressing anger at what they said was foreign interference, and looters actually ransacking the embassy of Kenya. Has this news filtered into Goma?
No, because people in Goma, now they are under M23 control. You know, this protest was because of the failing of Goma, a kind of Congolese people, not only in Kinshasa, because there were protests also in Bukavu yesterday and today in Lubumbashi. It's their way to express how they are so sad with this news, the fall of Goma under M23 control.
That was VOA reporter Sabiti Jafar Al-Khatanti speaking with me from Goma. Ahmed Fati, a UN correspondent and a global affair analyst, discussed with VOA senior analyst Mohamed Al-Shinawi the humanitarian situation in Goma amid reports of gender-based violence and rape, looting, and humanitarian and health facilities being hit.
At the outset, the humanitarian situation in Goma is described by the UN as dire and deeply concerning. What Jens Larkey said, who is the spokesperson for the UN Office of Coordination and Humanitarian Affairs, OCHA, highlighted the devastating impact of the ongoing conflict, pointing to reports of widespread suffering among civilians. The situation is quite precarious. There have been numerous cases of gender-based violence, including rape, committed by the M23 fighters, which have left the communities there traumatized and vulnerable at the same time. Add to that, looting of the property, including the targeting of the humanitarian warehouses, which are critical for delivering aid to those in need. Compounding the crisis, vital health and humanitarian facility in the city have also been struck. In the first day, there was about 1,000 injured people, but the hospitals cannot take more, and their operation has been disrupted due to disruption in electricity supply and water. Compounding these crises of health and humanitarian facilities, the city have also been struck severely, disrupting efforts to provide any sort of medical care and support to the affected population. The violence has forced thousands of people to flee their home, leaving them in different need of shelter. So we have hundreds of thousands now who are internally displaced from Goma alone. Food and basic supplies are in short supply and ability to deliver them due to the looting and the ongoing conflict in the streets. There is no signs of de-escalation up till now. UN is continuing to call for urgent international support, but I haven't seen much of reactions from those representing the major power. There is humanitarian emergency in Goma and its surrounding areas.
The M23 rebels are one of about 100 armed groups vying for a foothold in the conflict-battered North Kivu province, which includes Goma, rich in minerals, critical to much of the world's technology. Rwandan foreign minister said that Congolese President Felix Tshisekedi will have to accept talks with M23 to end the situation once and for all. What role did Rwanda play in this crisis, and what was the regional reaction so far?
Rwanda has been an active player in the disruptions in eastern DRC. They have been in years due to the rich minerals in the Kivu province. The United Nations, even through the Undersecretary General Lacroix for peacekeeping operations, he has accused Rwanda openly of supporting the M23. So as the United States in the Security Council have said it bluntly, highlighted the Rwandan role. These accusations have been met by denies from the Rwandan government and its president, Paul Kagame. The involvement has fueled tensions within the DRC, which has repeatedly blamed Kigali for destabilizing its eastern region. On the other side, the regional reaction have been mixed, but largely critical. Neighboring countries like Uganda and Kenya have expressed concerns over the spillover effects of the conflict, such as increased insecurity and refugee flows. The East African Community, EAC, which is active in this part of the continent, have deployed regional military force to help stabilize the region. However, the effectiveness has been very limited so far. On the African Union side, and other international actors have urged Rwanda and DRC to engage in dialogue to prevent further escalation. The Rwandese foreign minister insists that the Congolese president to negotiate directly with M23 has been viewed as some sort of an attempt to legitimize the separatist group. And this is, of course, is not an easy way to resolve the conflict. Overall, this crisis have deepened the mistrust and highlighted the urgent need for a unified regional approach to restore peace and stability.
That was Ahmed Fatih, a UN correspondent and a global affairs analyst, speaking with VOA senior analyst Mohamed Al-Shinawi. Thousands of people rallied yesterday in Niger, Burkina Faso, and Mali, all ruled by military governments, to back their withdrawal from the Economic Community of West African States Regional Bloc, which took effect today. The French news agency AFP reports thousands of people, led by members of the military government, gathered around the square in the Niger capital, Niamey, before heading towards the nearby National Assembly. They chanted slogans hostile to French President Emmanuel Macron, as well as other leaders in the region with whom Niger has strained relations, such as Benin, Nigeria, and Ivory Coast. In Mali, crowds rallied at the Kurakan Fuga near the capital Bamako, where the new constitution of the Mandingo Empire was declared in the 13th century following a major victory. Niger, Mali, and Burkina Faso have teamed up to form the Alliance of Sahel States. They are set to release common passports today and have announced the creation of a 5,000-member unified army to fight Islamic extremists. You're listening to African News Tonight on The Voice of America. Find us on voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. And of course, we'd love to hear from you. You can share your thoughts about the news and our programs by WhatsApp. The number is +1-202-258-3076. We'll be sharing our listeners' comments on African News Tonight. Egyptian President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi today called the forced displacement of Gazans is an injustice that we cannot take part in after U.S. President Donald Trump floated a plan to move Palestinians from the territory to Egypt and Jordan. The French news agency AFP reported that while addressing a news conference in Cairo with Kenyan President William Ruto, Sisi said the constants of Egypt's historic position on the Palestinian cause can never be compromised. Sisi said Egypt supported the establishment of a Palestinian state and the preservation of its capabilities, particularly its people and its territory. He added that Egypt would work with President Trump to achieve the peace based on the two-state solution. After the Israeli-Hamas ceasefire came into force on January 19th, Trump touted a plan to clean out the Gaza Strip, reiterating the idea on Monday as he called for Palestinians to move to safer locations such as Egypt or Jordan. The Trump administration has ordered a three-month pause on almost all foreign development assistance pending a review to see what fits under his America First policy. Aid groups and human rights watchdogs warn that the move will put countless lives around the world at risk. VOA's Anita Powell reports from the White House.
The U.S. spent just short of $70 billion on foreign aid in fiscal year 2023, most of that through the U.S. Agency for International Development, or USAID. The U.S. is the world's largest provider of humanitarian assistance and a global leader on HIV prevention and treatment through the President's Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief Program, or PEPFAR. With a stroke of his pen, President Donald Trump put all but the most urgently needed food assistance on ice, part of his charge to realign the U.S.'s foreign stance with its America First policy. The order pauses new obligations and disbursements of development assistance funds for 90 days while they are reviewed. The White House laid out its rationale for a similar move, pausing all federal grants and loans starting on Tuesday, though Press Secretary Caroline Leavitt did not clarify which domestic programs are on pause.
The past 4 years, we've seen the Biden administration spend money like drunken sailors. It's a big reason we've had an inflation crisis in this country. And it's incumbent upon this administration to make sure, again, that every penny is being accounted for honestly.
The White House did not reply to VOA's questions for more details on which foreign assistance programs would be impacted. Humanitarian groups are sounding the alarm about the foreign programs, some of which focus on issues like gender equity, business development, and, critically, the provision of U.S.-funded HIV drugs, which Biden officials called a key pillar of Washington's relations with the developing world. Stéphane Dujarric is a spokesperson for the United Nations Secretary General.
The Secretary General notes with concern the announcement of a pause in U.S. foreign assistance. He calls for additional exemptions to be considered to ensure the continued delivery of critical development and humanitarian activities for the most vulnerable communities around the world. Those lives and livelihoods depend on this support.
The largest single USAID project in fiscal year 2023 provided $14 billion in non-military assistance to Ukraine. Human rights watchdogs say they welcome robust accountability over U.S. taxpayer funds, but not pausing assistance during the review. Nicole Wittersheim is Deputy Washington Director at Human Rights Watch.
If you want to review all of the assistance, start your review. Be crystal clear on what you're looking at. Don't suspend life-sustaining and life-saving aid while you do that review.
And analysts expressed concerns about the immediate impact of the stop work order. Esther Brimmer is a fellow in global governance at the Council on Foreign Relations.
There are real concerns about the immediate impact of a stop work order on foreign assistance. We must remember that foreign assistance includes such humanitarian projects that relate to administration of vaccines, for example, to children around the world to make sure that they don't get communicable diseases.
On those global public health issues, Trump's stance is clear. He also announced on his first day in office that he would pull out of the World Health Organization, citing concerns that the U.S. is being ripped off as the organization's largest donor. He did the same during his first term. Anita Powell, VOA News, the White House.
Authorities in Somalia's Puntland region have banned the illegal entry of foreigners and also ordered telecommunication companies to deactivate SIM cards linked to undocumented individuals and Islamic State terrorists. The authorities are attempting to disrupt financial networks as they continue with a military offensive against ISIS fighters who have hideouts in the region. Mohammed Yusuf reports.
This week, authorities in Puntland stepped up their campaign against local Islamic State groups. Authorities recently launched military operations against ISIS fighters hiding in the Ali Miskat and El Mado mountains in Puntland's Bari region. Security forces seized camps and defensive positions and pushed the fighters farther into the mountains. Security agencies have also started a crackdown on undocumented people in the Puntland. According to local reports, authorities made more than 300 arrests in the operation. Meanwhile, Puntland's Ministry of Interior has issued a directive banning the sale of SIM cards to undocumented people and barring them from opening financial accounts without proper identification. Abdurrahman Yusuf Farah is a former intelligence chief of Puntland. He says Puntland forces and authorities are pursuing people suspected of being supporters and members of the group. This country needs peace and stability. Bosaso City is a business city, and the people living there need to live in peace, he says. The security agencies will not violate people's rights. An investigation will be conducted, and anyone who has entered the Puntland region legally will be respected. Those who are without documentation will be fought. The International Crisis Group, in a report released in December, said Islamic State Somalia branch was becoming influential in dispersing money to finance terrorism in Africa. The group extorts civilians and businesses to finance its operation and send money to other ISIS affiliates. Omar Mahmoud is a senior researcher at the International Crisis Group. He says the threat of ISIS in Puntland has been growing.
It's not just about the Islamic State in Puntland or in Somalia itself. But the group there serves as a connective node for Islamic State affiliates elsewhere in Africa, in East Africa, Southern Africa. They report to the Islamic State in Puntland, and then that serves as a connection to the Islamic State core and other affiliates outside of the continent.
Mahmoud says Puntland especially wants to block the local ISIS access to international banking systems.
The group has focused on really developing its financial capabilities, whether that's extortion in Bosaso nearby and then transferring this externally. They've really developed that particular niche, you know, much more so than an operational capacity. And so I think what Puntland's trying to do is crack down on their use of formal systems, whether that's the formal banking sector, telecoms, to make it harder for the group to continue to one, generate financing, but then to send that financing outside of Puntland as well.
Puntland is relatively peaceful compared to southern Somalia, but local officials have grown concerned about Islamic State's rising strength, fueled by foreign fighters. In its recent military operation, Puntland has rallied communities to support its forces, report terrorist activities, and work together against the threat. Authorities are now seeking international financial military aid, including air support, to combat ISIS fighters as the militants retreat into the mountains. Defeating them will be challenging and may take time. Mohammed Yusuf, VOA News, Nairobi.
And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, David Van Dee, and our engineer, Rob McLean, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.